We started on and really got well into the topic of Hakdama B'Shibalan. Thank you, that helps. Of going out of order, and we said that there is a mitzvah of doing your truma, your meiser, in the proper order, starting really with the Bikurim. We had various sources for that idea. We said doing it in the wrong order is prohibited. And that was all meant to set up our Gemara on Yud Gimel Amud Beis with Reish Lakish. So we are on Yud Gimel Amud Beis, 13b. We are about 15 lines down. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. And I brought here as a preface, because the Gemara is going to refer to the Psukim. So on the sheet, I brought you the Psukim. Ve'al ha-Leviyim tedaber v'amar tali. Hem, speak to the Leviyim and tell them, ki sikhu me'es b'nei Yisrael as ha-ma'aser asher nasati lachem. This is, just context-wise, this is in Parshas Korach. After the whole business with Korach's rebellion and the various post-rebellion rebellions and the demonstration of Aaron's selection with his staff and the whole thing, Hashem says, look, I'm giving the Kohanim and the Levim a special role, and there are various elements to that role, and there are tithes that come with it. And so the Kohanim are getting Truma, and the Levim are getting Meiser, and then the Levim are going to have to take their Meiser and give it to the Kohen as Truma's Meiser, not the whole thing, but 10% of it. So that's where this section comes in. When you get Meiser from the Jews that I've given you, you're going to then separate a tenth from the Meiser, and that will be for the Kohanim. So he says, the truma, your truma that's been given to you, will be considered like grain from the granary, like wine from the press. Kein tarimu gam atem trumas Hashem mikomas vaseichem asher tikhu me'ez b'nei Yisrael unzatem imenu es trumas Hashem le'aron ha-kohen. So you shall separate the truma of God from your meiser that you get from the Jews, and you're going to give it to Aaron. From all of the gifts given to you, you're going to then give this Meiser. That's the instruction to the Levim to give Trumas Meiser to the Kohanim. So the Gemara says, Amar Rishon ben Lakish, Meiser Rishon Shehegimo B'Shibalin Pater Mitruma Gedola. He says, let's say you separate Meiser before Truma has been separated. What now happens to Truma? We talked around this issue a little bit. Now we're seeing it in the Gemara. The rule is that it is exempt from Truma. In other words, we don't say to the Levi, not only do you have to give Trumas Meiser to the Kohen, you also have to give 1/40th, 50th, 60th, whatever that is, which I might have expected. No, that's it. You don't separate Truma from it. Shneamar, because the Pasuk says, Bahari Mosem Mimenu Trumas Hashem Maaser Mina Maaser, you shall separate from the Meiser the truma of God, a tenth of a tenth. So, Meiser min ha-Meiser amartilach, I told you to separate the tenth of a tenth. Velo truma gedola u trumas Meiser min ha-Meiser. Not that you have to do both truma gedola and trumas Meiser from it. So what Reish Lakish says is, gzeras ha-kasuv. It's simply because of the pasuk. Because the pasuk says the only thing you're separating from the Meiser is trumas Meiser, therefore you don't separate Truma Gedola. Clear? That's the idea. Amar le Rav Papa le Abaye. So Rav Papa says to Abaye, Ihachi, if that's true, if what Reish Lakish is saying is true, then afilu hikdimo bekri nami. The same thing should be true if he takes it from the Kri, meaning I didn't distinguish, I ought to have distinguished when we opened here. But what he says is, you only talked about Higdimo B'Shibalin, where the Meiser jumped the gun all the way back in the sheaves. Sheaves means it's before Gmar Malacha, right? Before it is actually Tevel, before it's obligated in tithing. That's when it's exempt from Truma. However, according to your logic, it should even be exempt from Truma if you took the Meiser early from the Kri. The Kri is the bale once it's already had Gmar Malacha. You follow? could have presented this a little bit smoother. Let's try this again. Let's pretend for a moment this popcorn over here is shibalin. It's not obligated in truma meiser or anything yet. It's raw materials. As opposed to these chips, right? These chips are already tevel. They're the kri. What you said is this. Let's pretend that this actually is chayiv in truma and meiser, right? Well, it's not chayiv because it's too early, but it's produce that was Israeli produce and theoretically at some point was going to become obligated in truma and meiser. I took off the meiser first, okay? Before the truma was separated. What we're saying now is the Levi who receives it is able to just separate truma's meiser. He doesn't have to worry about separating truma. There are two ways I can look at that patur, at that exemption. One way I can look at that exemption is say, sure, because it was from the Kri. The Kri is not even tabel yet. It's not obligated in anything. Therefore, the Levi isn't obligated in Truma. That's one way I can look at it. The other way to look at it is to say, no, I have a rule down the line. If Meiser is taken early, Truma need not be separated from it, just the Truma's Meiser. You follow that?
But that's only referring to what the Levi took.
Whatever the Levi took.
Nothing to do with the Yisrael, what he has left.
Correct. So those are the two ways I could look at it. With the application of that being, what if you jump the gun with the meiser later on, with the chips, which already had gemar malacha? If I say the reason why the meiser is exempt is because it was from the kri, then that means the meiser will be obligated in truma if I took it from the chips. However, in the event that the reason why the meiser from the shibalin is exempt is because anytime you take the meiser early, it's exempt. The same thing will be true with the chips from the kri. It won't make a difference. Still not getting it.
No, I don't get that.
Let's look at it then in another slightly different way. When I separate, let's take the end stage, okay? The stuff that's from the kri. Until the moment that we separated Meiser, the whole thing was obligated in Truma, right? Whatever part I end up pulling out and calling Meiser was also obligated in Truma. It would be very odd to say that by pulling it out and labeling it Truma, now it's suddenly exempt from Truma. That's a very strange thing. It's a lot more logical to say it regarding stuff that's Shibalin, which was never obligated in Truma in the first place. By calling it Meiser, I exempted it. It never entered into the category of being obligated in Truma. That makes a lot more sense. So the question is, when you tell me that when I take out of the Shibalin, it isn't obligated in Truma, is that because, yeah, it came from stuff that wasn't obligated at all yet, and the divider is here, right, between Shibalin and Kri. Once you hit a stage where it's obligated, it can't become unobligated. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is to say no. Because it has been labeled Meiser, that ended the Truma obligation from it. It's simply gone. All you have to do now is separate Truma's Meiser, in which case it doesn't matter at what stage I did it. Shibalin Kri doesn't make a difference. Is that more clear?
Yeah.
So, what the Gemara says is, the argument that Reish Lakish brought for exempting the Meiser from Truma was not a Shibalin-specific argument. He didn't say, well, it's from the Shibalin, which never had an obligation, and therefore it's exempt. He said, because Meiser only has Trumas Meiser separated from it. That was his statement. He said, it's because you only separate Trumas Meiser from Meiser, you don't separate Trumas Meiser plus Truma from it. If so, the same rule would apply with the Kri. It wasn't just Shibalin specific. And if so, why did Reish Lakish talk to me about the Shibalin, the much bigger chiddush, the much bigger novelty, would have been to talk to me about the chips, about the kri? Right? That's the idea. So that's the Gemara's challenge, what Rav Papa asks Abaye. Rav Papa says, Ihati, if that's true, that Meiser will never be obligated in separation of Truma, then afilu hikdimo bikri nami. The same rule should apply even if he took the Meiser from the Kri, from the chips, instead of just from the Shibalin. So Omar lay, to which he replied, you're right that hypothetically the argument that was brought should apply to the Shibalin and to the Kri, but I have another pasuk. He says, Alecha, for you, Omar Kra, the Pasuk says, Mikol, it should say Matnoseichem, not Masroseichem, Mikol Matnoseichem Tarimu Eis Kol Trumas Hashem. From all of your Matanot, you shall separate the Truma of God. That teaches me that if I separated Meiser from the Kri, from the chips, I do have an obligation to separate Truma. So I have one Pasuk that is teaching me that if I do it from the Shibal and I'm not obligated, that's the Pasuk, if you're looking back at source number one. That's from Pasuk Chavav, that said, V'hari Mosem Mimenu Trumas Hashem, Maaser Mina Maaser. So only Maaser Mina Maaser, and not Truma. But then, on the other hand, I have Pasuk Chavches, which says, Kein Tarimu Gamatem Trumas Hashem, we have Mikol Masro Seichem here, but then in the margin they tell you they want Mikol Matno Seichem Tarimu. Actually, they want Chavtes. Mikol Matno Seichem Tarimu is called Trumas Hashem. That one teaches me that I am separating Truma from Meiser, where it's over here.
How do they know which case?
Yeah. So that's what the Gemara asked. Good.
But the law, we already discussed which case. We said logically it would make more sense to say one way.
Okay, so Howie predicts the Gemara, Shaya predicts Tosfos. So the Gemara asks the question. The Gemara asks, Umara Isa, what did you see? Meaning, as Howie said, how do you know which pasuk is referring to which? Maybe the pasuk that says when you separate Meiser, you still need to separate Trumas Meiser. Maybe that one is talking about the Shibalin one. And maybe the pasuk that says you don't is talking about the Kri one. How do you know? So he says, because Hai Yidgun v'Hai Lo Yidgun. One of them already was made into grain, meaning the Kri. It has been fully processed. And the other one is not. So in other words, it's logical. One has reached that stage, and one has not reached that stage. If you take a look at Rashi, he says it. He says, on Hayidgun v'Hayloidgun, it is, Hayidgun is about two-thirds of the way down. Higdimo b'kri, if you took it out of the kri, meaning the chips, kvar naseh dagun, it's already grain. It's already been processed. Umishabalech lal dagan, and from the time that it enters the category of being dagan, chala alav kovas kohen, the obligation to give it to the kohen has begun. Dichsiv reishis daganacha, as the pasuk says, the first of your dagan. Hilkach mistabra dahaikra dizchusa dekohen akri tishtiye. So it makes sense that pasuk should throw the right of the kohen on the kri. The kohen will get it from the Kri, not from that which was earlier, from the Shibalim. So that's the flow of the Gemara. So Tosfos asks what Shaya is implying here. If you take a look at Tosfos, Umara Isa, Hayidgun Vahiloidgun.
Right.
So Tosfos says, I don't really understand why you even needed to ask that question. It's so perfectly logical that we would say that the obligation exists with the later stage item, not with the earlier stage item. He says, Vitema, Amshach, Hechi Asik Adaite Demakshe Lomar Ipcho. Where was your Havamina? Why would you have thought to say the opposite? Dibishibalin Yehechayav, that if you separated your Meiser early from the unprocessed part, then you have to separate Truma from it. Ubegdiman Bekriye Potter. But if you did it from the end stage, from the grain, then you'd be exempt. Imuchayav Bishibalin, if you're obligated when you separated it from the sheaves, Kolshkein Bekri, then certainly when it's from the Kri. Shekol Masha'ach Rechein Yechayav, anything that is later is going to be obligated.
Okay, but
why didn't you say the Torah wanted to canast you because you really demo? So maybe that's the logic.
It's an interesting argument, but it's certainly not logical that I would not apply the fine here. I'd apply the fine on both.
Except the comes to conclusion you do both.
Yeah.
Not the other way around.
The Baalbayit had a few to take the Truma before the lady took it. In other words, we had this whole concept of doing it in order. Okay, so when he took it when the Baalbayit didn't have a chiyuv, then we understand the lady was being greedy and jumping the gun. Okay, but when the Baalbayit had the chiyuv on it, then he had the opportunity to do it in order. The Baalbayit did not do it, so the lady should not be responsible at that point. The Baal HaBayit should have taken...
Keep in mind, the lady's not losing.
No, I'm saying the coin's losing. It's the Truma...
Oh, you mean the fact that the coin isn't getting it.
Right. So, but that would have been... Once there was a few, it should have been the Baal HaBayit's responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So that he could fulfill all the Meisers in order. Like, who's made an error changes depending upon whether we're talking about the Shibboleth or the Kree.
Why?
In one, the Levi has jumped the gun and the Balabite has done nothing wrong.
In both cases, the Levi's jumped the gun.
But in the other one, the Balabite already had a chiyuv to do it. The fact that the Levi jumped the gun is because the Balabite is going to
blow. In both cases, it's a cooperative sin. In other words, no one asked the Balabayas, I'm assuming this, no one asked the Balabayas, give this to the Levi now. In either case. The Balabayas decided to do it.
No.
But I mean, no one's compelling him. The Balabayas chose to do this, and the Levi chose to accept it. They're both aiding and abetting, so to speak.
Okay, the Balabayas chose to do it, or the Levi came and asked for it, and the Balabayas...
What's the difference?
Well, the difference.
Maybe he can't force him.
You know. No, I understand, but the difference is in one, the Balabite had a few; the other, the Balabite didn't have a few for the Truma.
That's an interesting question in its own right. In other words, if I own pre-Tevel items, do I have any mitzvah of tithing it, bringing it to the stage where it will be obligated and then tithing it? So what I would say here is I would apply the category that we have in various places in halacha of what's called a mitzvah kiyumit as opposed to a mitzvah chiyuvit. There are certain mitzvahs I am obligated to perform. I don't have a choice. So I am obligated to get matzah for Pesach. We don't say, if you own matzah, then eat it. Right? I'm obligated to make kiddush. I'm obligated to buy a light menorah. On the other hand, there are other mitzvahs which, if you have an opportunity, then fulfill them. So, for example, if I'm going to eat meat, do shechita. If I'm going to take the eggs, chase away the mother bird. There's a lot of discussion. Is there a chiyuv for me to go chasing away mother birds when I don't want the young?
But so maybe I'm not understanding the halacha of matzah. If you get the grain to the stage, that it's gathered and you're chayav to give truma matzah, don't you have an obligation to give it? It's an actual mitzvah to do it.
If you get the grain to the stage where
it's completed.
It's completed, yes.
So you have a
kind of thing that certifies something's a goof or not, because if you're not a farmer, you'll never have that opportunity. That's not a
weapon. No, that's not a Balabai has a fear.
No, but actually I'm wondering about that. We say that if you're doing it, this is the order you do it in.
Right.
But I wonder, is there really a chiyuv? If I own tevel, not the popcorn, I own the chips, do I have a chiyuv to go ahead and tithe it? Or if I never eat it, then I have no such chiyuv. Ostensibly, I think, I never have a chiyuv in either one.
Okay. Do you have the ability to sell it? Without
as long as I warn everybody appropriately, We say a chaver is always very careful and I'll tithe it right away, but that's because of lifnei iver. That's not because of a mitzvah of tithing. It's not that he's a chaver and therefore he runs to do the tithing. That's not what we're saying.
Okay. So I've misunderstood the mitzvah.
Assuming I'm right, which, you know, if look at the Menachas Chinuch.
We all assume that.
Yeah. So Tosfos asks, why? Why would you have assumed otherwise? V'omer harav Rabbeinu Yitzchak, it's the Rei, V'achi Kiyomar, this is what he's saying. Mara Isa l'chayev mikol tzedadin higdimo b'kri upadur b'shibalin. The Mara Isa was asking, why do I make a distinction between shibalim and kri? Why did I choose that as my distinction of saying that kri you're always obligated, shibal in the earlier stage you're always exempt? Ema, let's say, debein chiyuv ubein pitzur beigdimo bekri pater kodem reiyas pnei abayis vechiyuv la'achar reiyas pnei abayis. The distinction I should have made is, did it get into the house or not? Because bringing it into the house when it's already been processed is what triggers, really, my obligation to tithe, whatever, however I understand this obligation. That's a key stage. Umishani, to which the Gemara then answered, Hayidgan, this has already become grain, perish bigdimo bakri, if I did it at the kri stage, inside or outside. The imkain din hu sheichayev mikol tzad, and therefore it's logical to say that I'm obligated, whether it's in the house or out of the house. In other words, the key transition point is not getting into the house. The key transition point is, in fact, becoming kri. That's the way that he's looking at it. In order to really get this, we'd have to go into a greater discussion about the triggers for tevel. And with the role of Riyas Panei Habayis, there are six different triggers. You know, Achilas Keva, a Shabbos, a Yontif meal, there are all sorts of things. We'd have to really go into that in order to get further in terms of what Tosfos is saying. But he's also bothered by this question of why would I have thought to do otherwise? And he's saying that's not what the Havamin and the Gemara was. The Havamin and the Gemara was, and let's make a distinction between different types of Kri. That was really the question. And their answer was, once it has become Kri, once it has become Dagon, therefore, at that point, that's when the obligation begins, and therefore, that's where I draw my distinction. That's the idea. Okay.
Well, yeah. He starts out by giving Rish Lakish's position.
Yeah.
And then it says, Rav Papa said to Abaye.
Yeah. Abaye is a generation later. Rabbi and Rav Papa is his student.
So why does he even have to say who he's saying it to? Like what's the relevance of saying he's saying it to Abaye?
Because Abaye gave an answer, no? Abaye was the one to reply. Amar Lei.
Amar Lei, right? Yeah, but Rav Papa starts first.
Right, Rav Papa says to Abaye, and Amar Lei is Abaye responding. Yeah, so your alternative would have been to say Amar Lei Abaye, but why would you do that? Then it makes it sound like Rav Papa is speaking in a vacuum. So, yeah, I think that's the normal style. Okay, so all of that was concluding a tangent, meaning our core Gemara was not at all interested in Truma Meiser and Hakdama B'Shival. And our core Gemara was talking about Melila on Yom Tov, insofar as we wanted to discuss separating Truma and Meiser on Yom Tov, right? That was really our starting point, was giving the Kohen the Challah and the Matanos. Right, it all starts with you. Giving the Kohen the Challah and the Matanos on Yom Tov, and so then the question was, can I do Melila? And if you're going to tell me I'm allowed to do Melila, that means I'm able to do Truma. And I thought he couldn't do Truma. And that was what led us into this side note regarding the issue of Hakdama B'Shibalin.
Can I interfere for one second?
Go for it.
Okay, so Steinzel says in Myra Ita that the possibility that the lady takes it from the Kri,
yeah,
he may think that the Balabayit took the Truma from the what he already took.
That's why we ask Myra Ita?
And that's, yes.
Who's he quoting, or is that his own?
Okay. Now the prince can keep
quiet. Before I disagree.
That's okay.
It doesn't say that. Rav Rashi, Rav Shehikshal Advarav, Haritva, Erevin, Kirish, Shekavanas Advarim, who to show Hamash Amar Koidam, Alecha Amar Krav.
Yeah.
Korach Shavasa Shal Mahi Osa Ha Hochacha, Miham Mikra. So Ara Ain Omer Gabar Kashara, right. You use one eye.
Careful, you're losing your binding here.
Okay. Basically use it. Atain Bashem Taso Shans, his guru is Pirish Rashi, Hamakam Lamer Lehafa. Shama Hayla Mershi im Boha Levi Behik Dim Benokal Min Hakri.
Yeah.
How you hurry up a laugh shall Shahan Nelson Quar. Hifrish es chelik hatruma hadoa.
Okay.
Lachain ein lekansa. Ilu kashenotal b'shibolam yedohu shalom afrash adayin truma. Abuzadan hu noto shalom karoy.
That's an interesting approach. Okay, so what he is saying is he's viewing the obligation. He's essentially viewing the default as no, you're not obligated to separate truma. And saying he has to separate truma is actually a fine to the lady.
For doing it before the time that it was done.
Correct. Yeah. That's the way that he's looking at it. And therefore, he's suggesting that the penalty doesn't apply if the Levi takes it from the Kri, because the Levi had a right to assume that the Balabayas had separated off from Truma already.
Answer this discussion.
All right, okay.
That's his suggestion. The question is then. The question is, how does the answer fit?
Right.
I'm not sure how the answer fits.
He's going to assume that Cohen already got his first share. Why doesn't he assume he already gave Meister to the lady once it's sitting in the group?
Because otherwise, the ball would give it.
No, he's a chaver. Maybe he just. Once he gave one, he gave one.
Well, he came up to the Baal Bayis and said, "Could I have Meister?" And the boss didn't say no. Yeah, so, yeah, that would be... The Baal Bayis is complicit no matter what you say, in terms of this. And he's not getting any punishment that we can see, except that he's violated,
Losas. He's actually coming out ahead.
No. In what way is he ahead?
Because he doesn't have to give the first 2%.
The first 2%, he's...
Yeah, but now he gave more for 10%. I have 100. Yeah, let's see. I have 100 units.
No, because first he gives, say, 2%. He's got 98.
Yeah,
and he gives 9.8%.
So he's given away 11.8.
11.8, and the other way he's only given away 10.
10. You're right. Yeah. No, he is winning.
No, because he still has to give the truma. He's not putter.
No, but he's going to come away from the rest. He's not giving truma for the way he gave away.
Right.
Rashi said that explicitly. He's not. Yeah, no, that's true. He's coming up behind because he's violated Isurim, and it'll catch up to him. But yes, from a balance sheet perspective, right now he has profited by giving the Meister first. That is correct. Okay. So that was the first tangent, but the Gemara has a second tangent in this discussion, and the second tangent is regarding defining Gemar Malacha for the purposes of obligation in Meiser, which was our core discussion, right? And as far as the laws of Shabbos. And we begin with a Mishnah. Tnan Hasam, we're at the two dots in the middle of the page on Yud Gimel Amud Beis. The Mishnah has two halves to it. The first part is talking about peeling barley, and collecting it, and then, well, you'll see. And then the second part is about crushing and cleaning the malilos, which were those raw kernels of grain. So it's not awesome. Hamikalef seorin. Someone is peeling barley kernels. Mikalef achas achas veochel. So he peels them one by one, and he eats them without being obligated in Meiser. That's the point. This is called a snack. It's not called something real and permanent and fixed. Ve'im kalav v'nasan l'soch yado. But if what he did was, he's peeling them one by one and collecting them in his hand. So he peels one, holds it. Peels another one, adds that one to the pile. And another one adds it to the pile. So then, chayiv. Then he's going to be obligated in Meiser. That's the first part of the first part of our Mishnah. And Rabbi Elazar says, hey, you know what? V'chein l'Shabbos. The same thing is going to be true regarding Shabbos, meaning that if you do one by one, you're okay. However, if you do a bunch of them together, you're violating Shabbos. That is a malacha. You are processing grain on Shabbos. If you take a look at Rashi, Hamakalev Sorin, you see that Rashi? So Rashi says, might as well go through it. Hamakalev Sorin, he's peeling barley, la'ochlan kluthim chayim, he wants to eat them raw, just that he's removing the shell. I've never actually removed shells from barley kernels, so I don't actually, I'm trying to imagine in my head what this looks like. I've seen barley kernels, I've held barley kernels, but I don't know anything about shelling them. The ochel, and he eats them. Upater min ha-meiser, and he's exempt from tithing them. D'chiyai gavna achilas arayi, because it's just temporary eating, it's a snack. U'bishalonis marachukoi, we're talking about where it has not gone through meruach hakri. You haven't made that pile of them. Shemekalpon mitoch shibola shalahen. He's doing it straight out of the sheaf. Chayav, so he's obligated in meiser if he does a handful. Why? Dehava le keva. Because that is keva. That's fixed. Yeah.
Is this in? Did he bring it into the house, or is he doing this outside?
Well, certainly, if it's the Shabbos case, we would have to say he's doing it outside. No, let,
because we had before that with Melila, that if you bring in the house, it symbolizes that it's arrived.
Yeah, I'm not sure I should make the Shabbos thing. The right, we did talk about it regarding Melila. The case now is not Melilos, so I'm not sure I would carry it over. I don't know. It's an interesting question. I don't know. I could see arguing that it's where it's, we're going to get to the Tosis in a second, but he's dealing with a separate problem. The but we will get to the Tosos. The I'm not sure whether it's in the house or not. So the statement that the Tanakhama is making is, as Rashi says it, you trigger Meiser by collecting a handful, because now it's Keva, meaning this isn't full processing. But by collecting a bunch of them, you've shown you're eating a meal, and therefore you have to tithe it.
So that's a trigger.
Yes.
So trigger is pile or collecting a meal, right?
Well, no, pile is collecting.
Oh, that's what's considered pile.
Yeah, that's the idea, even though it's in your hand.
Isn't that right. Really what you're showing is, for your purposes, it's finished?
Well, that's true when I eat them one by one also. It's just that one by one is psychologically a snack. A whole bunch of them, that's a real meal. It's more based on that, as Rashi explains it. Tosfos has a different take. If you see Tosfos in Kolavim Benasam L'Toch Yado Chayav, so Tosfos says, Pirish Rashi bin Kolach Bitoch HaShibolin, Rashi says it's where you did it from the sheaves, and he challenges Rashi, hang on, that wasn't the one I wanted. I wanted halfway down the Tosfos. We have to see the other part at another point. But if you take a look at the, it's six lines up from the end of Tosfos, Umashe Pirish Rashi. He says, Umashe Pirish Rashi Hacha, Rashi's explanation here, Dim Kala Venasam Lasoch Yado Chaya Mipneshu Keva, that you're obligated because it's now fixed by putting it in a pile, in your hand, I should say. Lo Nihira, he says, that does not appear correct. Dibisamuch Mashma Shata Mipneshu Gmar Malacha, Hovu Kolev Harbebiyacha Dahainu Diguno. Tosfo says, the implication of the language of the Gemara is that it's actually called full processing. It's not that this isn't fully processed, but I am considering it a meal, which is what Rashi said, but this is the full processing. And he says the Gemara is going to imply that because it's going to make the equation between what's going on here with Meiser and the laws of Shabbos, for which full melacha counts. Yeah, what do you mean?
What's the difference, whether it's one or a half?
The for Tosfos, right? So Tosfos is saying that by accumulating a bunch of them, that shows that that's actually the Gemar Malacha, because you accumulate a bunch of processed kernels.
So it's not just a one-off haphazard.
I guess so. It's a little bit. I'm not 100%.
How can you call some one item a daka?
Not to mention, we haven't answered the question of how many.
Right. No. I think
right. So one by one doesn't. What about two?
Two.
You take two, and then you eat them. Two, and then you eat them. Three, I mean, we don't know. We have not been given any sort of threshold to work with. But that's the first part, is the statement of the Tanakhama. Doing this with a bunch of them, with a handful of them, triggers an obligation for Meiser, whether per Rashi or per Tosfos. Rabbi Elazar says it violates Shabbos as Malacha. What Malacha have we violated? So if you go back to Rashi now, V'chein l'Shabbos, if you see that Rashi, achas lo havi mefarek, told the didash dekila achar yadhu. Rashi says, if I do them one by one, it doesn't violate the malacha. The malacha would be mefarek. Mefarek is what we've already talked about when we talked about the beans and the nuts and so on, where you take something that grew all attached together, and then you separate it off. That's mefarek, to separate. And it is a subset of dash, which is threshing. But if you do it one by one, you're not in violation of Shabbos, because it is kila achar yadhu. It's an unusual way to do this malacha, because dash is an industrial process. You do dash with a whole lot of grain at once. You don't do dash with one. You don't take your take the cow out or the horse out and start pounding one kernel at a time. It's an ox that you use for threshing.
But you also don't do it by a handful.
I grew up on a farm.
You also don't do one handful. I mean, if it's a mass.
That's correct, but at least it's a mass amount that's more than the one by one. Mishakavtsan biyadav, have you told us disha v'chayev? It is called a tolda of dash if you do what is going to be considered a large amount for somebody who's eating. That's the malacha that's involved. The malacha is dash. So the view of Rabbi Elazar is, not only do we say that doing a handful of it is going to trigger an obligation for Meiser, but it's also going to be a violation of Shabbos, assuming it's Shabbos today. The Gemara doesn't like that comment of Rabbi Elazar. The Gemara asks a question. Is that so? Vaharav mekalfalei divishu kasi kasi. Rav's wife used to shell cupfuls of barley for Rav. And obviously on Shabbos is the implication. Rabbi Chia mekalfalei divishu kasi kasi. Rabbi Chia's wife did likewise. So what's your justification for saying that it's usher? You're going to tell me Rav's wife did something wrong? You're going to tell me his wife did something wrong? No, that's a bad idea. So we're going to have to come up with another explanation for what Rabbi Elazar said. Ella, i'itmar ha-seifa itmar. You're right. If Rabbi Elazar said something was a malacha, he wasn't talking about the opening line in that Mishnah about peeling the barley. What he was talking about was the end of that Mishnah, which says, "Hamolel melilos shelchitim menapeach al yad ve'ochel," or menape is another edition of that. "V'mnafach v'nasan esocheko chayav." If somebody crushes kernels of wheat, then he menapeach would be to blow on them. There are other versions of this with menape. He's winnowing them. He's shifting them. But the point is that he processes them one by one and eats them. This is the crushing the kernels of wheat. And if he's going to put it in his lap, he's collecting a whole bunch of them, then we're going to say he is chayav in Meiser, and on that, Om Rabbi Elazar v'chein l'Shabbos. Rabbi Elazar said that would violate Shabbos as a malacha. So not peeling barley, but crushing and cleaning the melilos. Clear? One side note on this, the point that Tosfos makes in the in this discussion, and this is Tosfos' point in the part that I skipped of Tosfos in Kalaf. He says, when we say the wives of Rav and Rabbi Chia peeled the cupfuls of barley on Shabbos, the barley has to have been separated from the sheaf already before Shabbos, because otherwise you would get into the Malila problem that we've already talked about. So that's a side note. Okay. So what we're seeing here in this tangent is two halves of a Mishnah in Maestros. The first half of the Mishnah says peeling barley and collecting a handful of it triggers an obligation for Meiser. We thought maybe also that's a malach on Shabbos. We back down because Rav and Rabbi Chia have wives who did this on Shabbos. And so we say no. That was about the second half of the Mishnah, which said that crushing and cleaning the melilos and accumulating them in one's lap triggers an obligation for Meiser, and also violates Shabbos as a malacha. So along comes Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel, and he asks a question which is very important for us. Maskif la Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel. Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel asks, I don't understand. Veresha lemeiser in leShabbos lo. He says, when you go back to the Resha, the case of peeling the barley, so you're telling me that collecting a handful of barley when you process it like this is Gemar Malacha for Meiser, but not for Shabbos? Right. Why not connect the two? If it's a Malacha for Meiser, meaning you have done your processing, so it should also be one of the Malachas of Shabbos. Umi ika midi dile inyan Shabbos lo avi Gemar Malacha. Ula Meiser havi Gemar Malacha. Where is there such a thing that it is Gemar Malacha for Meiser and not for Shabbos? He makes the assumption that, of course, it ought to be that the two should be the same. It's a very interesting assumption.
Shabbos is another factor, according to Rashi, and that is something's klariyah. It takes what it otherwise would be out of the Gemar Malacha.
We're getting there. Good point, we're getting there. So that's his challenge. To which Rav Sheshes Breider of Edi comes back and says, I can give you another example of that. He says, Maskif la Rav Sheshes Breider of Edi, velo, It's not so. You can't have a case where something is gemar malacha for meiser, but not for Shabbos. Va'garnon the meiser. What about the following case of establishing a granary for meiser? Disnan, Mishnah says, Ezehu garnon le meiser. At what stage do we say you've hit the granary for meiser, for different types of produce? Hakishuin va'deluin, gourds. Misha yipaksu. When the flower on the end of it falls off, vishalopaksu, and if the flower just stays on, that doesn't mean it's never going to be obligated in truma and meiser, mishayamid arema, then when you pile them up in a pile. That's what he says. So when it comes to meiser, the gemar malacha for gourds is either when the flower falls off, or when you pile them up. Utana nami gabe bitsalim, and regarding onions, we say as well, mishiyam mid arma, when you make a pile of them. Vilu gabe Shabbos ha'amadas arema patur, but when it comes to Shabbos, piling up the onions does not constitute a malacha. So there's a case of gemar malacha for meiser that is not gemar malacha, but is not a malacha of Shabbos. Now I should note, we do have a malacha on Shabbos called me'amer. Me'amer means piling things up. I'm not allowed to take a whole bunch of scattered crumbs, you know, and I'm having a conversation with someone at the table and distractedly play with the crumbs and make a nice big pyramid out of the crumbs. So why isn't this in fact a problem? So the Ritva writes, I've read it for you in source base on your sheets. He says the reason it's not, I'm jumping to the end of it in the interest of time. He says, "Didin ma'amer eino ella b'mekabet zvarim mefuzarim." It's only things that are scattered. That if you take them, put them all together, that's called ma'amer.
That's a
deraisa from the way you process grain.
If you do crumbs and put together, will be a deraisa. I don't know. Really?
You can't.
I don't know why it wouldn't be. The only reason it wouldn't be is machshen tzvicha
legufa. Right.
Maybe.
Question.
Sorry.
So, like, we have this little thing for doing the crumbs on the table.
Please don't try to ask my local rabbi this morning.
You're not allowed to do that?
So, what we usually do to avoid the question is sweep it not into a big pile somewhere, but just sweep it directly into whatever, you know, is putting it in the trash, rather than make a pile.
So, I feel like I can't put my hand here because it'll pile up in my hand.
So, if you have a little brush,
well, if
with
it's,
the, with really? The, you're not allowed to use that.
I did not say any such thing.
Okay. Hypothetically speaking, if you had a little brush with a thingy,
so
if you're not...
So I don't have to clean the table, in other words. Thank you.
What do you mean a brush with a thingy?
You ever see those little things? Crumpling. You ever see where you have the little...
Made for that would be okay.
In other words, the
have
the ones that...
Because the fellow in the factory in Korea thinks that he's making it for Shabbos.
Yeah, well, that doesn't make. I'm not talking about the thing that where it automatically the brush turns and
right.
Clicks in. I'm talking a little brush with a little.
Right. My answer to you is that a pile is a pile. It doesn't mean where you have the crumbs, you know, and there's this thin layer on the pan. That's not a pile.
Okay, so
this is a total threshing.
Not a threshing per se. Not a threshing. Ma'amir is its own malach. It's its own malacha. It's part of the process of processing grain is that after you've done your threshing, you now need to pile everything up.
So is it all piling or is it piling of grain?
No,
so it's piling of small particles.
Extended cars that your kid threw around all over the house, possibly.
So that's probably only the Rabbanan, though. I think the rice is probably food.
But you can't put them back. You can't put them back.
You might not be able to be scattered all over.
Right, if you play 50 pickup.
Put them into a pot, into a nice, neat pile.
I am so not getting it. I'm not getting into trouble here.
It's
the rabbi to get in trouble.
I think it's too hard for that.
It'd also be more.
Well, I mean, there are horror issues, a separate point. Yeah. Correct. This is also true. Drummick is crazy now. They want to play new card games, and their first question is there any borer involved? Can we do this? But Mohammed, they don't even know about it. In terms of...
I'd be happy to ask the question.
In terms of the issue of ma'amer as it applies here, the Ritva says if it's not scattered to begin with, it's not an issue. I would argue that this, in terms of applying this and saying it's really usher, you have to ask yourself whether crumbs on a table are truly considered mefuzarin. Even though in practice I've seen sfarim of halacha that say crumbs on a table are a problem of ma'amer, I wonder, because your onions that were saying, well, that's not a problem because they're not scattered. So where were they when they made them in a pile now?
No, because scattered means something, you did something to scatter it. It would normally not be scattered. So presumably the gourds were on the ground growing.
Wait, no.
Or it's Shabbos. Action of Shabbos, so they haven't been detached.
They're already in your house.
They're in your house with the flour on them, so possibly.
Yeah. I don't think it's so simple and clear cut that all the cases where we apply ma'amir are correct. I'm not so sure of that. I'm not being coy. I'm not sure. In terms of this, he is telling you that the gourds and the onions that you had in there already, right, piling up is not a malacha. Why? Because they're not scattered. So we have to define what scattered means if we're really interested in pursuing this. If you want, I can pursue it for next time and come back to you with an answer that what you're doing is awesome. But the
my wife would be happier.
If you came back military, yeah.
Right, yeah.
So there's no. What is the only other way to take the tablecloth out, shake it up?
Yeah, you know, you can.
Well, that can be an option, but another option would just be you sweep it straight into the trash bag or whatever
right,
it is.
You take the garbage. I see what you're saying.
Any discussion about how you move the trash bag? That's a whole other discussion. We
can't move the garbage from the kitchen.
Well, presumably you've thrown out some food that's edible still, and maybe it will permit you to recover it.
But how does he distinguish?
Grashal Ray, there are all sorts of discussions we can have about how this can be done.
How does he distinguish between the different malachas, whether it's for Shabbat and Easter Shabbat or not? In other words, I understand. He says it's possible to have a case where you have the piling of the onions. Okay.
Therefore,
but this case is more, the Reisha is more similar to the Seifa, that's Asur, than it is in the case of the piling. In other words, in both cases, you're separating.
But all he's trying to do is demonstrate that one and the other are not necessarily the same.
One is not a Gemara for Shabbos.
He's not saying it's the same as the Ma'amir, not Ma'amir discussion, but the Arema discussion. He's not saying that the two are the same. He's simply saying, don't assume that if it's a malacha for this, it's a malacha for that.
Which I understand. But now what I'm asking is, without that assumption, why would the Reisha and the Seifa, forget that it's an automatic assumption,
right.
Why would there be a difference between the Reisha and the Seifa?
They would be without that assumption, we would assume they would be the same. Why is a malacha for one? Should be a malacha for
no, but what Howie's asking is, let's say he's right. Let's say Gemar malacha for Meiser does not equal malacha for Shabbos.
Okay.
Going back to the cases in our Mishnah in Meiseros, why would I say that peeling barley and collecting a handful is Gemar malacha for Meiser and malacha for Shabbos, or whatever malacha for Shabbos, but crushing and cleaning the malilos and then accumulating them in your lap is Gemar malacha for Meiser, but not a malacha of Shabbos?
It was a malacha. So the barley, that's
what they
changed.
Okay, so the other way around. But, right.
But yes. I mean, right. The malachas appear similar.
What you're
saying is it's interesting.
Right. When Grant said that he made his distinction on the Seifa, and we're left with that same quandary. Why would he make a distinction in one case and not in the other?
Right, but not by making an assumption that one automatically is the other, but just those two are
right.
Similar.
And the answer I would give you off. The answer I would give you offhand is that the Gemara doesn't seem to care. In other words, what the Gemara has done is it has not proved that barley is a non-issue for Shabbos because of some logic. It's because Rabbi Chiya's wife is doing this, and Rav's wife is doing this, and there's no way they were doing something wrong. That's our proof.
So we don't need to know the reason.
Right?
That's
in all seriousness what they're saying.
Salvation cometh when you have a menhel card, or whatever.
Mimetic practice.
Mimetic practice.
Yeah.
Right.
This is a very big issue. It was my shiur on Sunday, the Shiva Sabatama shiur that I gave.
Oh.
But
you were there?
No.
But that's what he says. So I wanted to discuss this further, but we're already late. So I'll pick up with it next time because I wanted to talk about this idea further about the distinction between Gemar Malacha for Meiser and Malacha for Shabbos, because there's a very interesting piece that I saw that I think gives some insight into how this all works. So we'll have to pick up with it next time, and I hope to bring you also some more information regarding Ma'amir. So,